right, good morning, everybody. Today is Monday, March 30th, 2015. And this is Before the First Cup of Jewels here on UCY.TV. Happy Monday! Monday should be canceled. Oh, I hate Mondays. But the good news is it is 40 degrees and overcast here today in upstate New York, which means I have the door open, shorts on, and it's a heat wave just about. Actually, I saw it's supposed to get up to 50 this week, so there should be some rejoicing. Yay. It's nice. Almost all the snow's gone now. So a little bit of relief. Hopefully we don't get any more. All right, so I'm trying to remember where we left off on Thursday. Yes, that's right. I ran a rebroad on Friday. I forgot there was a school thing we had to do on Friday. So we were not here in the morning. But on Thursday, we took a look at dopamine, brain chemicals, and the manipulation of people utilizing the dangling carrot. And I think one of the main things that we had addressed was what civilization does to our brains, how it changes our brains. There was a clip that I found that had also talked about just by using devices such as our smartphones, it literally was changing the way the electrical impulses from your thumbs have react with your brain. And they were saying, you know, it's like, oh, look at every time you touch your cell phone, we can look at your records. And, you know, there's this increase in electrical activity and the thumbs. I don't even remember what the whole story was. But the scary point of the matter is that these devices are literally like changing our biology just by utilizing them. But I think what we're going to take a look at today, I don't know, there's all kinds of crazy stuff. I swear to God, you know, 2 years ago I talked about the story that came out with the Russian researcher who had always suspected that there was something weird about his relationship with his cat. And he had done all kinds of research and discovered that his cat had a bacteria that had actually invaded his brain and changed the way he thought about cats. Well, how weird is it? Like, that story came out a few years ago. We did it on air when it first came out. Scientific American just released that story yesterday. Again. But, I mean, that story's like 2 years old. I actually found the original. And it was queued up to read. But early hours last night, I see it coming through my feed. And here's Scientific American with the story about toxoplasmas getting into your brains and making you more agreeable to your cat's wishes. So we might have to read that one. Always pretty weird how that happens. I don't know why all of a sudden they'd be talking about cat taxoplasmas bacteria out of the blue. Here's one thing of note you might find interesting. The Large Hadron Collider, which was supposed to be powering up to full power at the beginning of April. And we'll do a whole show about the LHC, some of the stuff that I've learned. They're going to be hunting for dark matter and new dimensions. Yes, not a bright idea. I always call this bright idea 3,678. But it had been shut down for 2 years. They did all kinds of upgrades to make it a bigger explosion than's ever happened before the last time on planet Earth that humans have ever seen. Well, now it was all fired up and ready to go for this new season, and oh, it had a short circuit. This is days before it was supposed to start circulating protons again after a two-year hiatus. The world's largest particle accelerator has developed a short circuit. Yay! So I don't know if that was sabotage or not, but that whole thing is scarier than shit. If you've been watching that Large Hadron Collider, I mean, I think I first started posting stories about it in 2008, going, you know, danger Will Robinson, but nobody seems to care. I mean, some people care, but scientific community, you're just all bumping into each other to see who could be the one to go off the cliff first. It's just, oh, hold on. My headphones just pulled out. There we go. Pretty unbelievable how foolhardy they are and how willing they are to take us as a species right to the edge of extinction by pushing the edges of science to places where, A, we have no idea as to what really could happen, and B, we have no idea. And they will come out and admit that. We have no idea, so let's just create a device that can make explosions that are so close to the Big Bang you wouldn't know any better and then make them happen on Earth. Here's actually a good one, too. Here, we'll start here. This one might be fun. Good old Elon Musk is at it again. Could robots turn people into pets? Elon Musk claims that artificial intelligence will treat humans like Labradors. Robots will use humans as pets once they achieve a subset of artificial intelligence known as superintelligence. This is according to SpaceX founder Elon Musk, who claims that when computers become smarter than people, they will treat them like, quote, pet Labradors, unquote. His comments were made in a recent interview with scientist Neil deGrasse Tyson. I actually just mentioned him yesterday, who added that computers could choose to breed docile humans and eradicate violent ones. Elon Musk is already likened artificial intelligence to summoning the demon. But in his latest interview, Musk says his fears revolve around something known as superintelligence. According to author Nick Bostrom, is any intellect greatly exceeds the cognitive performance of humans in virtually all domains of interest. I mean, we wouldn't be like a pet Labrador if we're lucky, Musk told Tyson, adding that we may become lab pets to them. Tyson theorized that robots will, quote, get rid of the violent ones and then breed the docile humans. Musk also said that humanity needs to be careful about what it programs superintelligent robots to do. He uses the example of asking them to find out what makes people happy. It may conclude that all unhappy humans should be terminated, Musk said, or that we should be captured, that we should all be captured with dopamine and serotonin directly injected into our brains to maximize happiness, because it's concluded that dopamine and serotonin are what cause happiness. Therefore, it maximizes it. How weird that he just started talking about dopamine and serotonin. Now, that would be pretty frightening now, wouldn't it? The robots. Let's make them happy. Hey, here's Wozniak. I thought I heard Hal mention Wozniak the other day. Apple co-founder Steve Wozniak this week made a similar comment during an interview with Paul Smith at Australian Financial Review. I hadn't seen this. The 64-year-old admitted that he can now see some of the predictions coming true and that human-like computers could be a dangerous reality. He quipped, quote, we will be gods. Or will we be the family pets? Or will we be the ants getting stepped on? And you know, like I've always said, be careful what you ask for. Right now, these lunatics running the asylum think that they are usurping the order of things and making themselves creator in chief, usurping biological life with synthetic. But the joke might just be on them. Computers are going to take over from humans, no question, he added. This is Wozniak. If we build these devices to take care of everything for us, eventually they'll think faster than us and they'll get rid of the slow humans to run the companies more efficiently. He also directly referenced warnings issued by Elon Musk and Stephen Hawking about the threat AI has on humanity. And they are all a part of a group of experts known collectively as the Future of Life Institute, who recently drafted an open letter saying scientists should seek to head off risks that could wipe out mankind. I think I need to join that institute. I'm going to look them up afterward. The Future of Life Institute. Let's bookmark that. We're going to put that into the... We'll find that one because I'm very interested. The author said there is a broad consensus that AI research is making good progress and would have a growing impact on society, but it issued a stark warning that researchers into the reward of AIs had to be matched with an equal effort to avoid the potential damage it could wreak. For example, in the short term, it claims that AI may put millions of people out of work. And I'm going to tell you, that is the general consensus across the board, that they're going to take all the jobs. And, you know, hey, that's great. Lots of leisure time, especially as your sub $1,000 robot hits the market in 2015. But I don't know. Like, how are you going to pay the bills? How are you going to afford that $5 tomato? I literally, a couple weeks back, actually, it was probably a couple months back, I was at the grocery store looking for tomatoes and I couldn't find any. Like, you're kidding. Where are the tomatoes? And I must have gone up and down through the vegetables like three times. I didn't see any tomatoes. And then I look and I'm like, oh, there's the tomatoes. I take a walk over and it's the organic section. Yeah. So they had some organic tomatoes there. $5 a pound. I'm sorry. I can't quite afford $5 a pound for a freaking tomato. So put on a seatbelt and get a garden started. I'm going to tell everyone that is your homework assignment for this year. I don't care how much you tried before. This is the year. All right. So I don't know if the story is almost over here. Blah, 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 blah. What is this one? This is a recent report by a management consulting firm, Boston Consulting Group, predicted that 2025, the number of automatable tasks will rise to 25%. This will lead to robots replacing many human jobs, and it is a trend that has already begun in Japan. Earlier this week, with Riken SRK Collaboration Center for Human Interactive Robot Research in Nagoya, Japan unveiled its latest Robo Bear. Oh, it's scary looking. The Robo Bear has a cub-like face, but has enough strength to transfer a patient from a wheelchair or a floor-level bed to a bath. Yeah, these are the nanny bots that they were talking about to help take care of older people and invalids, to help roll them over, to prevent bed sores, to help get them out of bed, to help move them around in and out of wheelchairs. It weighs 309 pounds with extending legs that stop the bear from falling over, and it moves slowly and smoothly thanks to advanced actuators in its mechanical arms. And at the start of the month, Mitsubishi UFJ Financial Group said that it will begin employing humanoid called Neo in its branch office from April on a trial basis. And if the trial is successful, the robotic employees will be rolled out to more branches of the Japanese bank by 2020. From the reception desk staff to security doormen and waiters, the Fang Fang Space Capsule Hotel in Sichuan, China, has built rather than hired new employees. Startup costs of robot maintenance aside, yeah, the Japanese are building robots too. And I mean, they got billions of people. What are you going to do with billions of unoccupied people. I mean, is it going to go back to the days of the hunter-gatherer? That's what we did when we didn't have jobs. We didn't have time to have jobs because you know what? We were just fighting to survive. Quite an interesting thought. All right, well, that's the end of that story. I just thought I would bring that to your attention. Good old Elon Musk. And, you know, I was talking to my friend the other day, and my friend claims that Musk and Hawking and Gates and Wozniak, all these guys that are coming out and speaking about the dangers of future AI, aren't really against it, though. He's like, they never said that it was bad. I was like, I think you're right. I don't remember them actually ever coming out and saying that it was bad. Just coming out and saying, well, pay attention because they're coming. Because these guys all make money going up and down the river. Now, I do see that they seem concerned. But on the other hand, I don't see anybody like making any effort to stop the truck. Let's take a look. The Future of Life Institute. This is that group that he was a part of. Elon Musk donates $10 million to our research program. So this must have been that group that I had seen that he donated $10 million toward AI and keeping AI beneficial to humanity. Who we are. There's a scientific advisory board with Morgan Freeman on it, if you can even believe it. And Alan Alda, Elon Musk, Stephen Hawking. I don't know who some of these other guys are. That's interesting. Let's see. The founders, Jan Tallinn, co-founder of Skype. That's pretty interesting. Max Tegmark, a professor at MIT. That's pretty interesting, too. Victoria Kranova, PhD candidate at Harvard University. Yes, that's pretty interesting, too. Anthony Aguirre, professor at UC Santa Cruz. Yes, the California University System. All DARPA-funded sprinkle money. Mia Chick Tegmark, PhD candidate, Boston University. And then the Scientific Advisory Board, Alan Alda. Nick Bostrom, director of the Oxford Future of Humanities Institute at Oxford University. Eric Brindolfsson, director at MIT Center for Digital Business. George Church, professor of genetics at Harvard. Morgan Freeman, of course, narrator and science communicator. Alan Guth, professor of physics, MIT. Stephen Hawking does not need... He's actually director of research, Center for Theoretical Cosmology at Cambridge. Christoph Koch, chief scientific officer at the Allen Institute of Brain Science. That Allen Institute of Brain Science, that's... I was trying to find out that Paul Allen, co-founder of Microsoft, has this immortality project going on, but I was trying to figure out what he called it, and that's what it was. He was going at immortality by doing the brain research. So we also have someone out of that group. Elon Musk, of course, founder of SpaceX and Tesla Motors. Saul Perlmutter, professor of physics at UC Berkeley. Martin Rees, Demetrius, professor of cosmology and astrophysics. Now, if you notice what we're finding here, we got MIT, we got Harvard, we got UC Berkeley, UC Santa Cruz, we got a couple astrophysics places. You know, these are all the places where this crazy research is going on, and if there were any people that were ever in the know, it would be them. And I happen to see, too, there is a genetics professor on this board. You know, we were saying that we need someone on the inside who understands nanotechnology. We have a couple people from MIT and someone from the genetics group. I think I just found the group I need to find out how to become a part of. because these are some big people. We also have Francesca Rossi, professor of computer science at the University of Padova and Harvard. Stuart Russell, professor of AI at UC Berkeley. Frank Wilkes, professor of physics, MIT. And then there are a whole bunch of volunteers from Harvard, from Cambridge, from MIT, and from Harvard. These people are all scientists and computer science people. See, let's see if we can get involved. Hold on. I really am excited that there's an institute, and it's got $10 million from Elon Musk. Thank you very much, Mr. Musk. It's entirely supported by private donations, so I can get involved by donating. I can also apply for a grant, which is due March 1st, 2015, which is already over, to create a project for making AI beneficial and safe for humans. Can also volunteer. And that's about it. Huh. Yeah, I'm going to get a hold of these people, I think. I think I've made my decision. All right, here. What, you don't think it's a good idea getting a hold of these people? I mean, it's like walking into the belly of the beast. These people are all in the know. And who knows what type of a psyop. But I don't know, guys. I just am looking at the writing on the wall. We better figure out something, and we better figure it out quick. Because the train's not stopping on this stuff. All right. There was another story that came out in Singularity Hub a few days ago. And it was titled, it's an interview, Neil Jacobstein discusses the future of jobs, universal basic income. And that's what caught my attention. Because it's like, when there's no jobs left, what the hell are we going to do for money? You know, we've been talking about this universal ID program. I had not gotten back to that story. Brandon Turrell wrote a story back in 2012, actually, that it talked about the 1.2 billion people in India being under this universal ID program, the cashless society. And if anybody's been paying attention to what is going on right now with China, and all these countries just slipping it quietly over there, tipping a toe in the water and inking a pact with China's International Bank, you'd be going, uh-oh. Especially if we paid attention to the Apple wanting one-third of the world's gold, guys. I'm telling you, there's a big move happening right now financially. We had Germany, Italy, UK. There was one of the South American countries. I don't remember which one. Maybe it was Brazil. I'd have to verify that. Then Russia stepped on over the weekend, signed up on the International Bank. And then Hammy sent me Australia. And I just heard someone saying that the U.S. signed up begrudgingly. Do you know what? If China is launching their arm of an international bank, you better believe. Now, remember, they just opened their stock market up to foreign investment, and it was going off the charts. And we have this whole move down in the Latin American countries with the BRICS Bank trying to form their own international financing arm. But I'm telling you, this Chinese thing, I have a really bad feeling just watching how this is going down. China's been real quiet. All right, anyway, interview. Neil Jacobstein discusses the future of jobs, universal basic income, and the ethical dangers of AI as a part of Singularity Hub's Future of Work series. I had a chance to sit down. This is the author, not me, Tim Borney. I had a chance to sit down with Neil Jacobson, the co-chair of the Artificial Intelligence and Robotics track. Neil has worked on AI applications for Fortune 100 and government customers for over 25 years. Neil also has deep interdisciplinary roots ranging from environmental sciences to nanotechnology and molecular manufacturing. And Neil has spent significant time researching the ethical implications of exponential technologies. Machine learning and robots are going to create a lot of wealth, but they are also going to replace a lot of human labor. We saw that many types of jobs disappeared in the Industrial Revolution, but we also saw that create jobs that never existed before. Who's going to be the robot ass wiper? Say, no, I don't want that job. Is this the new wave of technological disruption? Do you think the rate of job displacement is going to be equal to the rate of job creation? I'm going to say no, if anyone ever asked me. Although many of my colleagues are more positive on the subject of new job creation, I think that it is likely that the pace of job automation will outstrip job creation in the short term and cause a lot of unemployment or underemployment. And, you know, if you're watching here, this whole TPP, I just saw now that there was some section, and it had been leaked in WikiLeaks before, but there was some section of the TPP that had just come out in trial. Hold on, behind the curtain. And we've kind of forgotten about it. Out of sight, out of mind, right? They don't talk about it, so it's really not happening. That's how it works. Except it is still happening. And it is still being negotiated without our knowledge, without Congress's knowledge, to sell the rug out from under us. We talked about this before. Corporations under the TPP could sue the states in private court if they think that they're losing sales or money. This is a leaked TPP investment chapter. A recently leaked chapter from the U.S.-led Trans-Pacific Partnership Free Trade Agreement allows firms to sue the countries that they are operating in via private courts, steering clear of national jurisdictions, says WikiLeaks. So must have been a section that came out in WikiLeaks. The chapter, which was completed on January 20th, was verified by the public citizen organization that was present during the secret negotiations in March, Telesur reported. The 55-page document discusses various mechanisms that enable corporations involved in transnational corporate investments to sue the states they operate in without involvement of national courts. Companies can file a lawsuit if they believe to be losing profits or even have a lower expectation of profit due to changes in the, quote, environmental, health, or other regulatory objectives, according to leaked document. Now, I mean, this is not the first time that I've read this. Let's say I'm manufacturing over in China, like Apple is, right? Let's say put China's ink down to the TPP. And, oh, I don't know. I manufacture all my products with shit tons of lead. But I'm part of the TPP, so is the United States. So I want you to buy my lead-filled Chinese children's toys in New York. And I'm going to propose that my profits are going to be $2 bazillion. Well, in the meantime, New York comes out and says, we no longer allowed children's toys full of lead in New York. And that Chinese company is going to say, oh, hell no, you don't. Because you're a signatory through the United States to the secret TPP that you had nothing to negotiate about because it wasn't for you. But now, because you're part of this agreement, I want to sell my lead-laden toys in your state. And we're going to sue you for the $2 bazillion we thought we were going to make. Shame on you, bad New York State. And that's the end of that. The corporation is going to get the upper hand, even on the state. That's like inserting the corporation into the control structure. That's like inserting the corporation into the government. The corporation can sue the state, but not within any jurisdiction of the United States for which we're a party to. We got an international kangaroo court? This is moreover, if a foreign firm feels that a new law passed by a state impacts its rights under the TPP agreement, it could challenge the country's decision in private arbitration, the investor-state disputed settlement. Such mechanisms interfere with national sovereignty and lead to many problems, says Anna Romero of the Peruvian non-governmental organization Red GE. In spite of the fact that there are already similar mechanisms in the free trade agreement with the U.S., what is happening needs to be revised because the attraction of investors should not reinforce or expand those mechanisms that have been generational problems to the state and interfering with national sovereignty. The leak chapter also guarantees protection to companies from direct and indirect expropriations and amendments to financial legislation. Back in 2013, WikiLeaks revealed a draft of the highly secretive multinational TPP agreement long in the works, and it has been described as a NAFTA-like deal. We all know how well that worked out for us, at least for us in the Northeast. It's been described as a NAFTA-like deal that is expected to encompass nations representing more than 40% of the world's gross domestic product when it is finally approved. The treaty includes 12 countries with the U.S. at the helm. The other countries are Australia, Brunei, Canada, Chile, Japan, Malaysia, Mexico, New Zealand, Singapore, Vietnam, and Peru. Wow. So Indonesia's not on there and China's not on there. You would think that some of those, Vietnam is on there. So you got Vietnam and Malaysia is probably where all your manufacturing is going to go. Not quite sure with some of these other countries. Brunei. Brunei is pretty small, too. Wonder if they have sweatshop slave labor camps there. And that's pretty much what this is. This is going to take your manufacturing down to countries where people make like 12 cents a day. And then they're going to come back and stuff it down our throats and force us to buy their slave labor products. So the treaty has been heavily criticized, especially due to its lack of transparency concerning meetings between potential TPP partners, including the U.S. and several nations in the Asia-Pacific region. Most of the draft documents have been published solely by the anti-secrecy group WikiLeaks in an effort to disclose as much of the agreement as possible before it is adopted. But opponents of the proposal in the U.S. have expressed concern that Congress could fast-track. And that was the other thing that we were waiting on. Obama was trying to push this whole fast-track thing. Except nobody's fully read this. They've expressed concern that Congress could fast-track the deal to expedite authorization by presenting it to the House and Senate with no amendments attached. Well, I don't think that's such a good idea. Shouldn't we all be allowed to read that first? I don't know. I just dropped to the story that was out of RT from, says today, I saw it at some ungodly hour this morning. So maybe it was today. All right. I had started in an interview with Neil Jacobson and about the loss of jobs with the takeover by robots and artificial intelligence. So this interview with Neil Jacobson, they asked him about the rate of displacement and whether or not that's going to equal new jobs. He says, although many of my colleagues are more positive. So we got the TPP that's going to be like sucking everything out like a straw, like anything that's left. Any little bit of manufacturing that is left, the TPP will be like a vacuum cleaner and suck it out of here like there's no tomorrow. And in the meantime, we got the AI bots that are priming to take all the jobs that they tell us that'll still be available, which are the mental capital jobs, the ones that require real intelligence to do. And the second that we get displaced by super intelligent robots is Elon Musk talks about, then those jobs will not be there either. All right. So anyway, this Neil Jacobson says, although many of my colleagues are more positive on the subject of new job creation, I think it is likely that the pace of job automation will outstrip job creation in the short term and cause a lot of unemployment and underemployment in the Industrial Revolution. You could jump off any unskilled labor job, take some courses, learn some new skills, and find a new, likely higher paying job. What is different this time is that we now have AIs and machine learning algorithms that can replicate many of the cognitive skills that these individuals would be pursuing, and they could do it much faster. In many cases, we will be seeing people partnering with AI and robotic systems to deliver productivity not possible with AIs or humans alone. The enemy of my enemy, I don't know, does that apply in here, is my friend. Like, we play nice with each other for a little while because we both can help each other, but eventually we're going to try to kill each other. Planet is not big enough. It just isn't. It really isn't. I think this tradition will ultimately be a good thing, he says, with AI and robotic systems working together with humans. We will generate more wealth than we ever have before. The economy will grow and businesses will be able to do new things they have never done before. Yeah, like not have to pay employee benefits or salaries. Wow, that'll be a nice new thing to never have to do again, won't it, as a business owner? $1,299 for my robot. And that's all I'm going to have to pay. All right. Most organizations, whether corporations or governments, are famously or infamously reactive rather than proactive. Is there any chance our global societies will prepare sufficiently to make this upcoming transition a smooth one? Or are we potentially facing some rough seas ahead? What are the major hurdles we need to get over if you want to minimize disruption? And this is the interviewer asking questions. Neil Jacobson says, society has a long history of not being particularly good at proactive change. We rarely, if ever, institute policy before a train wreck. Yeah, that's just what I want to hear. Like, I mean, we're talking about societal collapse here, people. You know, and don't, like I always say, don't think all this stuff isn't connected. I know it sounds like I jump around. Like, we're talking about AI robots and we're talking about Chinese investment and international banks, and then we're talking about the Trans-Pacific Partnership. Now we're back to talking about AI. How are these all related? They are all related. This is the takeover of the financial system and the displacement of humans that is happening right now. The biggest hurdle is psychological. Social attitudes need to change. Yes, you need to get on your knees, hold out your arms, and accept the chip. That's what it's going to be about. The people that accept the chip will become Labradors. You will be the ones that they can do exactly what Elon Musk said. Decide that you need to be happy and inject dopamine and serotonin directly into your brain. That's a very possible future. But if you don't line up to get the chip, if you don't line up to play nice with what their plan is that they are in the middle of executing right now, that you didn't get to vote on, that you're quote-unquote elected, selected Congress member who's supposed to be having your best interest in mind, isn't sitting on Capitol Hill reading this bill or fighting for your rights or fighting for your jobs. They're talking about fast-tracking this shit. They better hurry up. Because Selection Day is coming again soon. Says the biggest hurdle is psychological. Social attitudes need to change. Step right up, people. Most people currently believe that people need to work for a living and that there is something shameful or disgraceful about not working. Now, I'm going to call bullshit on that. Because many people have found that they would much rather not be working for a living. And what a suck that is on your youth. You basically use the dangling, they use the dangling carrot to get you to sell your life to them. That's what it's all about. And when you are in that grind, that 9 to 5, where you're just, by the time you get home, you are so burned out and you don't give a shit and you don't have time to deal with all your personal stuff you got to deal with. And it's already nighttime and you got to cook and you got to do laundry and you got to clean the house. God damn it. It just is too much. I mean, I owned a house and lived by myself for many years. And I got to tell you, it was just too much. Especially in the wintertime when, you know, we get lake effect snow and I'd come home from work and there's 4 feet of snow in my driveway. So then I had to park on the street and snow blow before I could even get into the garage. But see, all of that hamster wheel spinning is not to make you a productive member of society. I mean, maybe it is in some respects. But all of that hamster wheel spinning completely distracts you and keeps you from looking and paying attention to the small little details of all the crazy shit that's going on. You know, and then I mean, look at how convenient it is just to flip on the tube, watch 20 minutes of the news while you're stuffing your face with high fructose corn syrup laden GMOs. And then you turn it off and you go take a shower and you crash. And that's it. So you got the propaganda popped in your head. You've been made busy all day for some useless labor that you're performing for somebody else to get rich. And in the end of it all, you're just too damn tired to care. I don't know. I went off on a little thing, but it's true. So not saying that, I don't know. I mean, maybe in the past people thought it was disgraceful not to be working. I've been working for the last couple of years. I mean, I am working. I just work for no pay now. Like I said, it's time to cut the strings to the dangling carrot. That dangling carrot is how they manipulate you. And when there is no longer a dangling carrot, there's nothing that they can make you chase after. The propaganda is now where we chase after, but now we just got to get better at seeing the dangling carrot. So as a society, we tend to view negatively people that utilize social welfare and social safety net programs. You know, when we look at all the billions of dollars that are spent on bombs and armies and planes and war cruisers and tanks, and I mean, how rich all these bastards are getting and every single one of these military industrial complexes companies. When we look at how many bazillions of dollars and how rich Congress, the invested members of Congress, are getting, more than 50% are now all millionaires on the war against terror. If we had just taken even half that money and funneled it into infrastructure and social programs, I could pretty much bet you that we could have a pretty well-adjusted, well-educated society that has a nice infrastructure. I mean, wouldn't some really nice maglev, you know, we were talking about this the other day, wouldn't some really nice maglev public transportation have been nice in this country? Like from New York to California in a couple hours, and from all the major cities, even like an above and an underground subway system like they have in New York. I mean, isn't it amazing that in New York City you can get just about anywhere without a car? Why isn't it like that anywhere else? Wouldn't that fuel innovation and jobs and community and growth? And it would fuel every... Why the fuck don't we have that here? You know, why... And I hate how they poo-poo social programs. I mean, absolutely, I am not encouraging anyone to be third-generation fucking welfare, right? I've had my run-ins with those types of people. None of them were ever good. But on the other hand, if you really want to like dedicate your life to doing something for the greater good of the planet, why does that have to be on your dime? Like, if you really wanted to work hard and dedicate your life to some great social ill and help fix it, Why shouldn't, like, I was just thinking about that. Why shouldn't there be, like, some sort of safety net? So if people really wanted to do good things, why should you be working for a dangling carrot to make some multi-billion dollar multinational corporation rich with your time? Wouldn't it be much nicer to be able to be putting your time and effort and your brain power into solving all these great problems of humanity and not having to worry about the dangling carrot? You're just taken care of because you're dedicating your life to helping society. You know, it just upsets me that all the money that they've convinced us that we need to blow to go kill people could have very easily been used to fix the majority of our problems. Not all of our problems. I'm not saying that, but we have a lot of social and infrastructure problems here that those billions of dollars could have worked wonders with. I don't know. So when I start hearing, you know, I still don't understand how in some of these other political systems that talk about not having any social net programs, how they're planning on taking care of people that are currently, and I don't mean people that are scamming the system, I mean people that currently really need those things, people who have lost the use of their limbs or who are, you know, elderly and need some assistance. How are we, I mean, honestly, I run an organization here that depends on donations, and I haven't seen a donation in over 6 months, and I'm not going to hold my breath for it either. Because it just doesn't happen. You know, there are other radio hosts out there that I hear them all the time making comments about donations. And they need to get donations to buy their new equipment. And they always seem to come out very disappointed because guess what? Nobody donates. And I'm sure that it is the same across the board. Unless there is some political motivator, like you'll be able to influence a decision that works to your benefit in the end, you're not going to be seeing any big paychecks anywhere. So if we have all these people, let's say we go to a system where, you know, libertarian believes in getting rid of the social safety nets. And it's all about volunteerism. So you're going to volunteer to take care of, you know, the things like building the roads or taking care of the invalids. But do we really think that's going to happen? You know, I take a look across society right now and I'm not very impressed. I'm not very impressed about moral values. I'm not very impressed with a large majority of people that I come across in the general public. You know, when we look at what our society is raising this last generation and this current generation, we're creating a society of psychopaths. Well, I'll tell you what psychopaths do with invalids. They throw them headfirst off a bridge or they kill them. Okay. That, or they use them for evil experiments to then make sure that the nanobots that they're injecting into your brain isn't going to kill them. It'll kill you first. That's what happens. They don't come all kumbaya and give you a nurse mane and a sponge bath. That isn't what happens. So I don't know. I don't know how I got off on that, but I'm just saying that, you know, there's a slippery slope that's going on here. And the fact that we're blowing on the money and there's no money left and we've sucked it all out of this country and I don't see any way to get it back. I mean, now we're in perpetual war. Nobody is really looking at the major consequences of what's going on with this Yemen thing. It's kind of been real under the radar. The only place I've really seen a lot of coverage is Pigmine's had quite a few videos on it. But Saudi Arabia has this entire coalition of countries behind it now. I don't remember even what the whole story was, but somehow there were these Houthi rebels, these Iranian rebels that were running around in Yemen and Saudi Arabia and Egypt and some of the other countries all decided that, hell yeah, they got to go and just launch bomber ships and started bombing the shit out of Yemen. And what's even better is that Obama just came out the other day and he says that he is not ruled out. The U.S. isn't going to get involved. So we might very well start bombing Yemen now. And here's another thing that I saw that I haven't seen any coverage because I think it's that ho-hum thing that they've already, everyone is desensitized. Remember we talked about overstimulation and desensitization on Thursday as well. And I think we're already desensitized. Like people are confused because they can't keep any of these hard names of these hard cities in these foreign countries straight. I have to because I'm the one organizing all the playlists. So I need to know the difference between Tikrit and Jakarta. But, you know, people don't, in general, people are pretty poor at geography. And I mean, shame on them. They don't know the difference between Iraq and Iran. But did you guys see now the U.S. for the first time. And I mean, I remember I even questioned, I raised that eyebrow and said, what? We've been doing this before. Yeah, 1991. The U.S. has gone in. Remember, we were only going to offer some assistance, quote unquote. Wasn't going to be boots on the ground. We were just going to offer some consultation to the Iraqis fighting, quote unquote, ISIS. Well, the U.S. for the first time has now jumped into the game in Iraq, and we have started bombing ISIS. Now, I thought at one point we had been, but I don't know. According to the news, it's saying we hadn't been. We'd only been bombing ISIS in the Syrian borders, not in the Iraqi borders, but I guess we are now. So it is all out. Guys, there is so much going on right now. That's why I'm not even dedicating a show to it. We're going to have, by the way, Lady Pitbull has the next couple days off. It is spring break here for the kids, so it's very difficult for me during spring break. So Lady Pitbull is going to be on to give me a hand for the next few days. We're going to have some good political discussions about some of the craziness that's going on, and maybe we'll even open the phone lines. I saw someone call in here before, but it's very hard for me to try and stay on point and take a call. So we'll do that over the next couple days, anyone who wants to call in, and we can have a big, happy conversation. Anyway, all right, I'm getting off the track. So, let's get back to this interview with Neil Jurgensen. He says that the biggest hurdle is psychological. Social attitudes need to change. You need to get rid of that disgrace about not working. And one of the great things about moving towards a world of abundance is a society that will be able to easily afford to provide education, healthcare, shelter, and social services to everyone. Guys, when I hear that, I think Agenda 21 all the way, Buck Rogers in the 21st century, in your little cubicle room with your little helper robot, beep-deep-deep, that comes and they make sure that the nanobots give you your injections or your dosages today of your serotonin and your dopamine. And then we all just walk around smiling, asking which way to the orgasmatron. I mean, really, people. And then we have our replicators with our 3D printers using some sort of nanotech bottom-up manufacturing to create us an apple or an orange because, oh, it doesn't grow anymore. All made out of bug protein. I mean, so if you've never listened to this show before, you're probably like, oh my God, what is this girl talking about? But I mean, that's all well-established technology that they're already working on all these things. But honestly, when I really look like down this timeline, I see nothing good. This utopian world that they're trying to sell us is not a utopia. This self-driving car that comes and scoops you up when you push it on your smartphone, soon to be your augmented brain device. You know, touch your temple 3 times for the Google self-driving car to pull up out front. This isn't a good world, people. You know, I mean, you can look at it like how exciting when your kid turns 16, you don't have to worry about him dying in a car accident because they're going to have a Google self-driving car now. But on the other hand, the Google, oh, hey, speaking about the Google self-driving car, I need to tell you this because I was going to make some quirky comment about my kid, but she came home from school the other day and they had them working on, you know, I think I've ranted about this before, about how if you're going to have teachers learn to teach, and I mean, we're losing the ability to teach our kids, right? We're losing the ability to get them to critically think because they're not teaching that anymore. They're teaching the standardized testing. And a lot of the way they're doing that is with these computerized applications, again, automating the classroom. And we know this is the dangling carrot, the dopamine addicts the kids. I don't want my kid interacting with a computer as opposed to a human being for learning, okay? That isn't, you know, it's great maybe for reinforcing the ideas, but that's not inspiring creativity on the level that another human can. Well, they're working on all this math testing now because they're getting ready to do their standardized tests. And my kid is on this computer, this math program at school. She comes home and tells me the other day that they had an ad and it popped up and it wanted them to do a survey. And I guess all the kids did it. And it was a survey from Google asking you your thoughts about the self-driving car and if you would drive in one. And if you think that they're kind of neat looking, and where would you go in your self-driving car? It was Google getting business intelligence out of the children. And I was like, wait a second. So is Google contributing money to the schools and their payback is going to be to mine the children's minds? So at the end, there was a little text box and they asked the kids a question. If you would be afraid of a self-driving car, and it was a yes or no. And if you answered yes, it gave you a little box that asked you why. And my kid tells me, and I'm like, oh no. My kid tells me she typed in there because it could drive you to the police station. I think she's been listening to her mom too much. Oh God, guys. So anyway, yeah, and you know what? I'm out of time. I got 35 seconds, but the one other story, and I don't think I'm going to even be able to get to it, it has been now revealed by looking at the FOIA of the White House log sign-ins that Google executives have been averaging one meeting a week at the White House since 2009, guys. So you know what? This absolutely was not a fantasy. They have all been planning this for a long time, and any of these tech companies that tell you that they are not watching you and that they're on our side, they're gonna fight for you, are full of shit. All right, guys, everyone, stick around. It's Monday night tonight. All kinds of great radio.